Thank you for listening to By Our Love podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing justice and righteousness in regards to the current civil rights movement. We will also be talking about neocolonialism, abortion, the new COVID-19 vaccine that is being tested in South Africa, and the book Target Africa. This should be a very interesting episode, and we are so glad to have you here.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to By Our Love podcast. This is Charlton.
And Natasha. We are a large Christian family living abroad in East Africa, and we would like to invite you along on our journey of faith, hope, and love.
On this podcast, we're going to be discussing our Christian walk, kingdom convictions, discipleship, and church planting,
as well as international adoption, the ins and outs of daily life as a family of 12, and inviting on special guests that motivate and inspire us.
We hope to be a source of encouragement and challenge the status quo. Thanks for joining us. Well, thank you again for joining us on today's episode. We know that it's been a little quiet. We haven't been on here for a while, but we've had a lot going on as we've been just reflecting on things that are happening in the world and having discussions here. Also, we've had some changes with our brothers from Canada, Stan and Graham, who have been on previous episodes. They are back home safely now, so we praise God for that. And we know that we have a lot of topics, kind of a broad range. It may seem like that we're covering today, but they all tie together. They all will come together, and we hope that you will see that by the end of the episode. And if nothing else, if we're able to at least create some questions in your mind and help you to think through some of the current events of, that are happening, then we'll view that as a success. So joining us is Jaja Wanda, also known as Mama Charlton, or just Jaja, or for some people, Wanda. You will remember her from a previous episode where we highlighted His Image Ministries, which is the pro-life work that she does here in Uganda. And she has a team of people that she works with. And so we're excited to have her on the episode today and to bring in her contribution to the conversation.
Hey, it's great to be back. In case you don't know, there's a previous podcast, and that is podcast number 17, where we talk about the pro-life ministry, where myself and my team are trying to save lives of not only the children, but the mothers that are carrying the children in the womb. I'm looking forward to today's conversation because it really has a lot of nuance to it. The topics that we're going to talk about are connected, but they are very deep and wide, and a lot of people kind of jump on and say that they agree with something that maybe they don't really know what the whole program is. So I'm looking forward to us having that conversation so we can maybe help people to be a little more critical thinking at this time when there is so much emotional thinking going on.
So one of the major themes of the Bible is justice, seeking what is right, what is just. And we see this all over the place. We see it in the Psalms. We see it in the Proverbs. We see it in the prophetic writings, Jeremiah, Isaiah. Over and over, we see this constant theme or these words coming out where God's covenant people are supposed to be exercising justice and righteousness and mercy in their societies. And it doesn't just start there. I think we actually have to back up a bit and go to the beginning of the story, that originally the one creature that is held to a higher standard, is made in God's image, is supposed to be the ones who are rightly representing him over creation, over his good creation, and exercising his wisdom and his authority and his rule or dominion over this world that he has created. And sadly, as we know, that story goes on and it becomes corrupted. through sin entering the world and how that has continued to work itself out throughout history as people have used power and authority that were things created and given by God. They've been used to put others down and to oppress and to utilize that power as a means to step up for themselves, for their tribe, for their country. So we see God continually calling his covenant people to be those who are not participating in the systems that are full of oppression and unjust things, but actually to be a part of the solution. They're supposed to be those who are seeking what is just, seeking what is right, and pulling up those who are oppressed by these systems. And so, biblically speaking, when we're talking about justice, we need to know that we're talking about restorative justice, not retributive justice, which is what a lot of us probably automatically think of with the law system and crimes. Something's been committed, and so you're either guilty or innocent, but actually dealing with restorative justice, pulling up those who are oppressed, which is what you continually see when it talks about giving a voice to those who don't have a voice, helping the poor, the widowed, the fatherless, speaking for the ones who aren't able to speak for themselves and advocating for them. And so there is a tremendous amount of opportunity that we have in our day and our age to actually speak into these issues. I mean, to seek justice and righteousness is not a passive pursuit. It's an ongoing active pursuit and an active involvement in the social situations of our day. And now, obviously, with our involvement, we have to be careful. We need to remember we do represent another king and another kingdom, and we have to be the ones who are modeling and showing forth those things, because I think very easily we can get caught up into the politics of all of it and choosing either right and left, conservative or liberal, and as we talk about a lot here and also on the podcast, there is a third way, the Jesus way. And I think that's the beautiful thing that we see as we look at Scripture, is that we see all that the prophets are speaking about and longing for. The psalmists and the wisdom writings are talking about the beauty of righteousness and justice prevailing, and it all finds its answer in the person of Jesus Christ. And so not only were his teachings revolutionary, but so were his actions. When we think about even just the simple teachings that we read and maybe get a little lost on us today to, what it means if someone hits you on one cheek, give to them the other also, or if someone compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. But when we actually understand what Jesus is saying, he's confronting a lot of the injustices that are happening in his day and showing his followers another way to overcome those things and to actively pursue and pursue righteousness and pursue justice. And I think it's interesting that, you know, when Jesus is confronted by the scribes and the Pharisees, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, for you pay tithes of mint and cumin, but you neglect the weightier matters of the law. You neglect justice and mercy and faith. Those things you should have done without leaving the other things undone." And so we can see that even from Jesus himself, that this is something that gets to the heart of what God wants to see from his covenant people. He wants to see us being involved in giving a voice to those who don't have a voice or to those who can't get their voice heard, pulling up those who have been oppressed by these structures and these systems and these individuals and whatever the case may be, but seeing how we can sacrificially give out of ourselves to pull someone up. In Micah 6, if we look there, and actually starting up in verse 6, so chapter 6, verse 6, it says, "How shall I come to understand the Lord and devote myself to the Most High God? Shall I reach him with burnt offerings, with year-old calves? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, or with a myriads of streams of oil? Should I give my firstborn for my ungodliness, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has shown you, O man, what is good. Or what does the Lord seek from you but to do justly and to love mercy and to be ready to walk with the Lord your God. And so I think we see the embodiment of this here. What Micah is talking about, we see this embodied in Jesus himself. And so how can we truly choose the Jesus road? You know, when he comes in, he's going to the hurting, to the oppressed, to set the captive free, to give sight to the blind, to lift up the ones who have been pushed down. He's touching those who others wouldn't touch. He's talking with those who society said, don't talk to them. You know, we have all these divisions within our cultures, and Jesus, the work Jesus is doing is to tear all those barriers down. I think this is why Paul continually is saying there's neither Jew nor Greek. Those are two very categorically different peoples, and for various cultural reasons and societal reasons, they should remain separate. But in God's kingdom, they come together, and there is no wall of separation. He goes on to say there's neither slave nor free, and we're right there, slave and free. That puts you on two totally different pedestals, and within Christ, those walls of separation have come down. And so are we actively going out and continuing to tear down these walls that either our society or our upbringings have taught us about? How can we actively tear those things down and be like Jesus and continue to do what is right and what is just in our day and our age, especially in light of the current events that are happening right now, as we think about the civil rights movement that is happening, as we look at the injustices that have been happening for many years. But I think a lot of it is coming to a head as we look at this situation.
Thank you, Charlton. I think what you said was so good. And I would just say that to add on, to sum up what you said, is justice really is a radical and selfless way of life. And as Christians, people, that's what we should be giving off to the world, is that we are selfless and we make other people's problems our problems because we are to love our neighbor as ourself. But with that being said, I do think that we should talk about some ways that Christians are getting swept into a very secular worldview in this cultural moment. I actually came across a really good blog called Christian Mom Thoughts, and this woman's name is Natasha Crane. It's a great name, Natasha. Shout out, Natasha. I actually had never heard of her before. Somebody on Facebook posted this, and she talks about five ways that she sees Christians maybe losing focus and getting distracted and being sucked into, yeah, more of a secular worldview. And so I wanted to share some of the things that she had on her post because I thought that they were really good and truly something to think about. The first one she says is that she sees that we're too quickly jumping on social bandwagons hitched to secularism. So I think the key here is just being mindful. There's just been so much going on this year, and it is so easy to just want to jump in and do something because I feel that's how we're made. We're made for this radical lifestyle to stand up against injustice. And so we want to do it and we just want to jump on and make a change and see equality and see justice. And I totally understand and I get it and I feel that passion. It is very important, however, that we do think very carefully about these issues and how we go about change. So back to this blog post that I was reading, she has, we're too quickly jumping on social bandwagons hitched to secularism. So how do we do a better job about this? We need to carefully read statements of belief on the sites of organizations that you support and promote. For example, before you champion the organization Black Lives Matter, be sure to read the statement of beliefs on their site. These reach far wider than a statement of Black equality. Their support for abortion desire to disrupt the traditional family structure, and call to erase all gender lines are just a few of many concerns here. And before we donate to any organization, we really should look at public financial statements to see where funds are being used. An organization's statement of belief is very important to look at. Next, we really shouldn't be using hashtags unless we understand where they originated, what they represent to the people who created them, and what they very likely communicate to those people around you. She also has on here, before purchasing books, look at the endorsers. Are these people you already trust to hold to a biblical worldview? And read both 5-star and 1-star reviews. Many times the 1-star reviews will expose the underlying assumptions of the book. And that isn't to say that you shouldn't read the book or a book you disagree with, but rather that you should be fully informed before going into the book regarding the worldview from which it's been written. So I think that these are some really great tips on how not to get sidetracked and lose focus, because at the end of the day, we are in God's kingdom and we hold to His standards. So I think there is an important distinction here. We believe that Black Lives Matter, but we don't support that organization.
Thank you, Natasha. Thank you for sharing that blog post. That was very powerful and had a lot of wisdom in it. I want to kind of tag on to the things that you said there, and that we need to remember that our God is not a God of chaos. He is not a God of disorder. And so when we see chaos, we should be suspicious that what power is going on here. Satan and the powers of darkness are very, very powerful, as we as Christians know, and they love to take something that happens in our human realm, and it might be a small conflict on the human grounds, but then they ignite it into what we're seeing now. I mean, I really, every time I see these things, I'm like, wow, that is beyond human evil. That is beyond human badness, human whatever. That is, some of those things going on are just, they're almost an entity in themselves. So I think we need to like stop and say, okay, who are the players? Anytime you go to support, connect yourself with someone who is a hashtag whatever, go look at that website and see what they believe. For example, with the current controversy around Black Lives Matter, we have somebody saying Black Lives Matter, but then there's an inconsistency because they say they're for reproductive rights and that bodily autonomy. That means that they are for abortion. That means a woman has a right to abort her child at any time. And most abortions are done on Black children. And Black women disproportionately represent the women that Planned Parenthood target for abortions.
Yeah, from their website, I quote, "We deserve and thus we demand reproductive justice that gives us autonomy over our bodies and our identities while ensuring that our children and families are supported, safe, and able to thrive." Another quote from their website, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable." So with all that being said, yes, Black lives matter. And as Christians, we should be leading on these issues, not shying away and not following a movement that is hostile to the gospel of the kingdom. We cherish, we love, we appreciate the different cultures in this world, different ethnicities. They are beautiful. We are all made in God's image. We are equal. And so This is something that we all feel very passionate about, but in that passion, let's not be deceived. Sorry, y'all, I got into a bit of a tangent there. I'm like many of you, just fired up about this issue. In fact, I have been the past few weeks, and I think Charlton and Wanda can attest for this, I've been very burdened, I guess you could say deeply burdened, over something that I saw on Facebook. So I follow Live Action, which is a pro-life page on Facebook, and they posted something very disturbing. Basically, I'll just go ahead and get into this. The BBC recently reported that African countries do not have enough ventilators to treat people affected by the coronavirus. Now, we live in Africa. We're in Uganda. We are very much aware of this and the lack of resources that the people here have. The World Health Organization's director for Africa stated that the issue of ventilators is one of the biggest challenges that the countries are facing. Other concerns include limited personal protective equipment and lack of access to soap and clean water. So a lot of African countries do not have what it takes when people become infected with the coronavirus to treat them. That is a big problem. Well, on Live Action, they go on to share that Swedish International Development Corporation Agency, SIDA, I don't know if that's SIDA, but they responded to the crisis African people are facing by deciding to donate $2 million in aid, not going to urgent medical needs, but instead they plan to use the $2 million to fund abortion kits for the continent. They said, "Our program is especially important for vulnerable women and girls in the region. We need to address the effects of COVID-19 quickly to have their human rights safeguarded so they are able to decide for themselves when and with whom they will have children." So the agency will also allocate funds towards the education of local healthcare workers, community leaders, and individuals. Instead of providing African countries with the equipment necessary for saving lives, this organization is focused on promoting a radical abortion agenda. Now, on here, they quote a pro-life activist. She's actually an amazing woman. Her name is Obianuju Okocha, and I might be pronouncing that wrong. So girl, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Uju for short. That's what I hear, Uju. And Life Action has some quotes from her, and this led me to really think about neocolonialism and how the West has thrown their ideals on Africa and other countries. And it was actually Charlton who recommended that I read this book that Uju wrote. And this book is called Target Africa.
This is a great time to define neocolonialism. So neocolonialism is the practice of using capitalism, globalism, cultural imperialism, and conditional aid to influence a developing country instead of the previous type of colonial methods, which were very obvious with major military force and power and actual occupation within a given developing country. Myself and Jan were actually talking about this. The neocolonialism is actually a lot more dangerous and challenging because at least with the original forms of colonialism, you can visually see and know who they are and what's happening. It's still not good in itself, but this is a little bit more subtle, under the radar, and not as obvious unless you do some digging. But the implications of what happens as a result of these ideologies and neocolonialism is majorly detrimental. And I think you're going to see that as Natasha shares a bit more from Uju and her book, Target Africa.
A secondary definition that I found on Britannica, just another source, says neocolonialism is the control of less developed countries by developed countries through indirect means. The term neocolonialism was first used after World War II to refer to the continuing dependence of former colonies on foreign countries. So hopefully that gives a well-rounded definition for everybody. So on to Target Africa. This book by our girl Uju. I just discovered her and I already love her. She was born and raised in Nigeria. She started the organization Culture of Life Africa. She is a scientist by education, training, and profession. And she wrote the book, of course, Target Africa, that we'll be discussing. She also has a YouTube channel with some really great content. So you should definitely check that out.
Thanks, Natasha. That was very good. I love Uju. She is a very inspirational person for me personally and our HIM team. We have watched a lot of her videos and we have utilized them in various ways. Yes, she is very much a outspoken wife and mother and scientist, and she is a very strong voice for the pro-life movement. So thank you for bringing her up.
This book is very relevant to what is happening today in our world. It's been relevant. She came out with this book years ago. I'm going to share some quotes from this book. And I really hope that if you guys have not read this, that you will do so. It's very eye-opening. It's very educational. And we definitely recommend it. So Robert P. George wrote the foreword to her book. And he works at Princeton University. He started the foreword by saying, "It is sometimes said that the people of sub-Saharan Africa and other developing parts of the world live in post-colonial societies. I wish it were true. The fact is that colonialism for the people and peoples of Africa and other places did not really end, or if it ended, it has been reinstituted. Today's colonialism lacks the formal features of the old colonialism. There are no longer viceroys, governor general, and occupying armies, but it is nevertheless a type of colonialism, ideological colonialism. The economically powerful and culturally dominant nations whose governing ideology is a form of what the late Robert Bella described as expressive individualism use their hegemonic power to impose on the people of Africa and other developing nations and regions legal and cultural norms informed by that ideology. Despite the fact that expressive individualism and its legal and cultural norms are not just foreign, but are antithetical to the beliefs and values of those on whom the hegemon seek to impose them." He goes on to say, "Expressive individualism is at the heart of the secular progressive worldview that now functions as the religion of many Western elites. It is increasingly clear that it is a militant, evangelizing, and fundamentalist type of religion. It seeks to embody its core doctrines and law as well as social practices, and it exhibits very little tolerance or even patience for dissent or dissenters. It regards traditional beliefs and values from the sanctity of human life in all stages and conditions to the ideal of chastity and the idea of marriage as the conjugal union of husband and wife, to the conviction that children are blessings that are far more valuable than personal economic advancement or material possessions and wealth. Such beliefs and values are to be stamped out among allegedly backward people and peoples as quickly and efficiently as practicable. Where possible, Western elites are willing to accomplish the goal by conditioning various forms of aid on conformity to expressive individualist ideology. If necessary, they are prepared to use international legal institutions to attempt to coerce the backward into compliance." So, Can the people and peoples of Africa and other developing parts of the world stand up to those to whom Uju calls our new colonial masters? Is resistance possible or is it futile? The task is anything but easy. So while reading this book, I discovered that African nations receive from Europe and America about $43 billion in aid every year, mostly from Western government aid agencies. And this aid comes with strings attached, as in compliance with population control measures, including abortion. And that was very disturbing to read. And it really is true. After looking at that Swedish organization that's pumping $2 million into some different countries here in Africa in abortion kits, and then reading this, it just really confirms that. And I know at the core of all of this is population control, population size. There's a big concern in the world about the increase in population. Well, in this book, Uju says that with regard to population, Africa's problem has more to do with uncontrolled urbanization. Most African governments invest most of their development funds in a few strategic cities, which has caused mass migration into these areas by people searching for jobs and basic amenities such as electricity, healthcare facilities, and schools. And we have definitely seen this here in Kampala.
Yes, Natasha, that quote is right on. So much of the emphasis is on go to the city to make a living and leave the villages. And that has created a lot of these problems with abortion. For example, one reason that many people come to the city from the villages is for not just for jobs, but for education, like the universities. And so then here, these young people have premarital intercourse, and then they're shocked that they have a pregnancy and they run for an abortion. So this coming to town, coming to the city, really is like leaving the village life behind. There's no rules. I can do anything I want. No one can see me here. And so then we end up having all kinds of bad things happening to young people. And then when they get an abortion, then they go on and some of them have multiple abortions. Mm-hmm. And it just creates a lack of responsibility for the young people. Because they think, well, I'll be good when I go back to the village, mm-hmm. and I'll get married to not to the person that I've already had children with, but we aborted them. I'll get married to someone else. And that's just so unstabilizing.
It's a serious disconnect. And then all the grandparents, the mamas, they're all in the village. So they come here and there's no parental supervision. You're 17 and 18 years old. And I guess that's a lot like university in the States. You get sent to uni. But the difference is a lot of children in Uganda go to boarding schools too. And so there is not that discipleship from parents, because maybe many of them are uneducated. So they think the best thing they can do is send their child to boarding school, and then they get sent to university. And it's very hard. It's so hard on the youth that come to Kampala. And then they end up living in a slum. They don't have money for housing. And then the slums grow. And then these Westerners see big slums and they're like, oh, population control. Let's sterilize these women. Let's send all these contraceptives. Let's bring abortion. Let's get rid of, let's get rid of some of these people. It's too much. It's too big. But it's like, why not invest in the rural areas? Why don't you put that money into the rural areas? Like Uju said, I love this quote. It's very heartbreaking, though. How does practically sterilizing the poorest women in the world give them control over famine, drought, disease, and poverty? Why not invest, like we're saying, in the rural areas, in education, in proper food, in water?
Yeah, there's another agenda there, and it gets kind of dark. Some of the things I've read really talk about racial disharmony. There's a lot of racial disharmony underneath some of those things.
You know, that kind of brings us to our last talking point, I guess you could call it, as far as racial disharmony goes. Back in April, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this, a French doctor, Dr. Jean-Paul Meyre, suggested testing COVID-19 vaccines in African countries. He said, "If I can be provocative, shouldn't we be doing this study in Africa where there are no masks, no treatments, no resuscitation?" He compared it to some AIDS studies. He said, "In prostitutes, we try things because we know that they are highly exposed and that they do not protect themselves." So this French doctor said that, wanting to test vaccines on Africans because they don't have masks or treatments or resuscitation. And people fought back. People really stood up. A lot of Africans stood up against this. I am actually a bit shocked when I found out that recently human trials of the coronavirus vaccine was administered in South Africa. It was administered by Britain's Oxford University. And the area that these tests are being administered is poor. There was a protest organizer that said, "The people chosen as volunteers for the vaccination, they look as if they're from poor backgrounds, not qualified enough to understand. We believe they are manipulating the vulnerable."
You know, if this was just like doing some sort of scientific experiment and these weren't human beings, it would make sense. You know, you use practical logic, like, okay, this person's more likely to encounter it anyway, so you go ahead and you test on them. But when you just say, okay, these are humans made in the image of God, then that destroys that. It's like, no, that's not okay. We're not saying that there's not other vaccine trials going on throughout the world, but this appears to be one. Number one, it's a massive number of people, 2,000 people, and we're not experts, so we don't keep up on every single thing on vaccines. But the thing is that most likely these people will be uninformed. They will trust the doctors and the people to have their best interests at heart, it will be doing something to them that if they really could understand the implications, they might opt out. But that option most likely will not be given, considering how history has been on this.
Well, there's just definitely so many things that are happening and going on in the world right now, and it gives us as Christians a lot of things to be praying about, and hopefully questions to be asking in our families and conversations to be having as a community of people, community of Christ followers, and seeing how we can really respond in this time and be the church, be the hands and feet to give a voice to the oppressed and those who have not been heard. How can we utilize our place in society where we're at, utilizing our gifts and abilities and talents to bring a voice to the conversation and to be able to stand up for what is right and what is just. So we hope that you've enjoyed today's conversation. If you would like to reach out to us, you can do so on Instagram at Podcast By Our Love. You can also send us an email at byourlovepodcast@gmail.com. Have a blessed day.